Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Friday, April the 26th, day number 116 of 2013. And you know, it's late April, and many of you know that usually in May and June, people begin to graduate from high school, from universities. So today we're going to be talking about college degrees and what exactly is the college degree worth today in the job market. Very interesting conversation, very timely conversation. Given the time of the year that we are having, we'll be talking to Kevin Kellard. Kevin is a friend of my son Silvio, and they work together, have known each other for a while, and it was through my son that I was introduced to Kevin. He's a very interesting young man, wonderful background, and he's going to be sharing some of his experiences with us. And Aaron Clary, our good friend Aaron, author of the book Worthless, is also going to be joining us as well. So we're going to be talking about college degrees, the value of a college degree in today's job market. As always, my book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, is available in print, available in Kindle. And by the way, I will be going to Miami on May 18th and 19th. The Babalu blog is doing a Cuba Nostalgia Weekend, and I have been invited by the Babalu blog to sit in there with them and have an opportunity to present my book. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm very grateful to everybody over at the Babalu blog for the invitation. This is the kind of thing that, you know, the kind of opportunity, of course, when you write a book you always want, and I think I'm getting it, thanks to my good friends at the Babalu blog. On this day in history, a couple of items. 1865, John Wilkes Booth was killed on this day in 1865. Of course, there had been a manhunt for John Wilkes Booth after the assassination of President Lincoln, and they finally found him today and killed him. Actually, they found him a couple of days before, but they killed him today. And in 1986, you may be old enough to remember this, in 1986, the nuclear accident in Chernobyl. That was a huge thing back in 1986, but I'm going to have to ask Kevin about that. I wonder if he was born in 1986. We'll find out in a minute. This is Silvio Canto. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let me say hello to Kevin Kellard. How are you, Kevin?
I'm excellent, Mr. Canto. How are you doing today?
Absolutely great. I got to ask you, were you born in 86?
I was born in 84, but I did not remember the explosion, or the meltdown, I should say.
You probably had other things in mind in 1986.
Slightly. It was, I guess, ignorance is bliss at that age.
Yes. Of course, 1986, you had this incredible accident in the Soviet Union, in the city of Chernobyl, and lots of people were contaminated. What a probably the worst nuclear accident in world history. I could be wrong, but that certainly was one of the very worst ever. Well, Kevin, tell me about yourself. I'm so excited to be with you today.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your program. And you know, really, I had a chance to read Cubanos in Wisconsin, and you know, it was just such a timely and formative read for people of my generation. I'm 28, so while people of my age don't have direct experience with with the Cuban immigration in light of Castro's regime, it's just such a topical insight, and really, enjoyed it so much, hearing your perspective. So, really congratulations on, having the stick-to-itiveness to, not only pursue a book, but to get it to completion.
Thank you very much for that. That's very kind of you. I should tell the audience, my son, right? My son, Silvio, I was saying that you two guys work together, right?
Yes, sir. That's how I knew Silvio, and you know, he was telling me about the involvement that you and Gabriel had in putting the book together, and so I couldn't help myself but pick up a copy, and as I said, it's amazing when you can easily take what we have in the U.S. for granted.
Yeah,
and that is just such a stark reminder of how many people were affected and displaced by a really, really mistaken and morally bankrupt ideology.
That's right.
But
I have to tell you, Kevin, that I'm glad you brought this up, because that was really one of the reasons for writing the book, was to talk to young people and to have young people like you, check out this book and maybe pick up a few things about how wonderful capitalism is and how dreadful communism is. And so I'm glad that you were able to read the book. I didn't realize that you had read the book, but I'm very happy that you did. But now tell me a little bit about yourself and your background. You have a great background. And also just bring me up, just refresh my memory how you and Silvio, my son, actually met.
Sure. Well, I'm from New Jersey originally, and I went to Williams College for undergrad and had the opportunity of captaining our college golf team there. So that's a sport that is of particular interest to me. And I worked in investment banking in New York City, and a few years into my tenure had a chance to meet Silvio, because we worked together on a number of projects, and it's really been a true honor and privilege to befriend him. And since then, I've gone to business school. So currently, I'm at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University, pursuing an MBA. So I'm just in the process of completing my first year. And, it's been a tremendous experience, wonderful opportunities. And on the side, I also maintain a personal finance and economics website.
That's right.
That I've done for about 2.5 to 3 years now. So trying to stay active and engaged in many of the issues that your show highlights.
Well, thank you so much for that. That's right. You have a website that you've been advising young people on finance, and that's a good thing. I got to ask you one more question before I bring in my good friend Aaron Clary, who's holding. Now, Silvio has pretty good taste of girlfriends, doesn't he?
I'm not going to go into that commentary, but I'll put it the diplomatic way of saying is I believe he has done very, very well for himself.
That's right. We're talking, of course, about the very beautiful Christina, who is just
absolutely
not only a beautiful young woman, but a really beautiful young woman in every sense, not just physically, but inside, and just an absolutely wonderful young woman from a great family there in Houston. So I wanted to put you on the spot, Kevin. That's
fair. I think Silvio and Christina are both very, very lucky.
Yes, I think you're right. I think we're all very excited about that relationship. Let me say hello to my good friend Aaron Clary. How are you, Aaron?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Let's say hi. Say hello to Kevin.
Howdy, Kevin.
How are you, Aaron?
I'm living the dream.
All right. Well, you got Aaron up in Minnesota, and Kevin, you are in right now where, New Jersey?
Up in Illinois right now.
You're not that far. You're not that far from Aaron. Well,
exactly. A lot closer than Dallas.
That's right. I'm the only one, I guess, who can wear shorts today, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, very good. But let me just kind of set the table a little bit. I told you, Kevin, about Aaron Clary's book, Worthless, and we've done some shows with him before. And today what we want to do is talk about this, the whole idea of a college degree in the job market. And, of course, I'm a very strong believer in education. I've always felt that education is vital, especially in a world economy where we're competing with lots and lots of people. But, of course, the question is, what degree do you choose and how effective are you in this world economy. And I'm going to begin with a article that I sent both of you today. I hope you had a chance to see it, about college graduates and their prospects for jobs in 2013. And, you know, the job prospects are not the best, but we've had situations like that before. That's not the first time that we've had a recession. But there's something in this article that really stuck, I mean, just hit me between the eyes, and it's because I've talked to Aaron so much about this before. And I'm just going to paraphrase what it says, but it says that a survey of 600 hiring managers concluded that 66%, that's two out of every three college graduates, are not prepared for the workforce. Now, that's pretty stunning. That's pretty stunning. I mean, we've been talking about this, Aaron, before, so maybe it doesn't come as a shock to you. But, Kevin, that's pretty stunning to hear something like that. What's your reaction to that?
That is truly remarkable. You know, right now it's really interesting because there is a bit of a segmentation in the U.S. economy. You know, with many of the manufacturing industries going overseas, there's such a high premium on very highly skilled labor. So right now the high skilled service sector jobs, you know, some of the prime core skill sets are math, science, and just critical thinking and writing skills. And these are all skills that, unfortunately, it certainly seems, according to this study, that hiring managers just do not believe that colleges are adequately training many of these kids. And you know, one other aspect of it, too, is that if you ask colleges, I'm sure they would say that, you know, they are doing the best with, you know, the talent pool that they have, which indicates that there are even earlier education, like structural challenges, where people are graduating high school without really like a very strong foundation in these critical skill sets. So yeah. It would be interesting to hear Aaron's point of view too on, you know, where, you know who he thinks you know, it would be most responsible for this, you know, for this deficiency.
All right, Aaron, you got it.
Well, I think I'm much more pessimistic than both of you, in that I truly believe that education has become nothing more than a scam and a racket. Not to sound conspiratorial, but nobody is at fault except for the people who are attending the college and the charlatans that are willing to give this quote-unquote education to them. You have a bunch of 17, 18, 16-year-old kids who are going to declare a major. They have, frankly, had their asses kissed the entire time by parents, teachers, academians, whatever. Do whatever you want, blah, blah, blah. Ignore those evil, meany, Republican, conservative, libertarian people talking about the realities of the labor market. You follow your heart, and the money will follow. And there is multiple hundreds of billions of dollars industry more than willing to take advantage of these kids and say, oh, do you want to major in English? Even though you were brought up in the United States and you speak English and we all speak English here, well, we'll charge you $80,000 for that. This is a racket akin to the housing bubble or the housing market. But probably even more so, because at least with the house, you get something to live in. With education, this really is a racket. They're selling these kids, and veritable kids, 17, 16-year-old kids, the idea that they can go ahead and major in something that's easy, that's fun, and that in the end they're going to have some kind of financial prospects or hiring at the end. So I'm much more pessimistic than you guys are. Not that you guys weren't, you know, all puppies and flowers and unicorns anyway, but I look at it as in terms of they're malicious, they're conscious of what they're doing, and they really don't care.
Right. Well, that could be true, and I think you're right that a lot of universities are. I think what you mean by the word racket is that they're being funded, I guess, by a lot of these. By a lot of the government services and so on. But I think the biggest problem is Aaron and Kevin, the biggest problem is graduating a bunch of kids, I say kids, young men and women, who really don't have any skills when they go out in the workforce. I mean, you have a degree in European literature, a degree in you know, 13th century poetry. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm sure it's a wonderful set of knowledge, but it doesn't make you very employable when you go out in the workforce. It seems to me that we're graduating kids who are underemployable, underemployed, and highly in debt. That's what I'm seeing, Kevin. And I was at at our book party a couple of weeks ago, you know, with my sons, and they invited a bunch of their friends. And that's what I'm hearing from a lot of them. And a lot of them are very successful young men and women, but their debt levels and being a bit underemployed, I mean, they're a bit frustrated. I don't know if you're hearing the same thing, Kevin.
I absolutely am, really across the board. And but when you think now that you have student debt loads of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, you know, for undergrad oftentimes, and then far more for graduate programs, that becomes a really insurmountable thing to finance if you're even somewhat underemployed, coming out of it, just from, you know, pure economics. And I think even even extending it to law schools, there's certainly been a lot out in the media over the last 2 or 3 years with law school prospects being so bad that you still have many of these programs with that are graduating kids with six figures of debt, but very little in the way of tangible employment prospects. and that's truly scary, because if you're coming at it from the perspective of a student, you want to make a long-term investment in yourself, because you're trying to put yourself in a good position to benefit for the next 35 to 40 years of working. But as Aaron said, many of these institutions are probably overrepresenting the value add that they're able to provide, especially in a tight labor economy that we currently face.
Right. Aaron, did you want to say something? Because I had another point I wanted to make.
Well, the only thing that I would add, and Kevin's right, but the only thing I would add is that we have taught these kids, or brainwashed them, we haven't taught them anything, we've brainwashed them into treating a college education like a hobby. At the same time, hypocritically asking them to go 50, 60, 70, sometimes, if you go to grad school, $150,000 in debt, and not dare think about that in terms of an investment. So if you go to somebody, some kid who can't find a job, they're unemployed, then they got all this student debt, you say, well, why'd you go and major in philosophy? Well, it's not all about money, man. It shows you just what kind of brainwashing they've received. What we got to do today is really point blank tell these kids, look, you're going to spend as much money, sometimes as much, on a house in terms of your education. What we're asking you to spend in terms of money and your youth in terms of time, 4 years minimum, 8 years in terms of a doctorate, you should demand a rate of return. You should demand a return on investment, because that's what it is. It's an investment. And what angers me more than anything else, even though I'm an evil right-wing conservative, blah, 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 is where we take young, innocent children, 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, and we brainwash them into becoming what would be leftists, even though technically I would be sworn against them because they're evil enemies, blah, blah, blah. We should be preventing these kids from making these mistakes, saying, look, is it worth the $80,000 to get your degree in women's studies or Chicano studies or whatever it else? And that's my primary beef with it. Like I said, it is a racket. It is, and I truly do believe these people in the higher echelons of education know that.
Right. Now, of course, I agree with you. I mean, when you are going to invest that kind of money in an education, I mean, you really have to be prepared for the fact that you're exactly right. It's an investment. It's like if I come to you, Kevin, and I say you're a business school student. If I come to you and I say, look, I want you to lend me $100,000. First of all, you're going to ask me, how are you going to pay me back? You know, what are you going to invest this in? What kind of a business is this? And in many ways, an education or a degree should be treated that way, Kevin, like an investment. And if you don't think you're going to be able to make the $100,000 back, maybe you ought to be doing something else. Maybe go to community college, get a job, maybe go into the military if you're a young man or even a young woman. Maybe do something else. I think Aaron's got a great point there, Kevin.
No, I definitely agree with many facets of that, and I do believe that there's just a chronic insufficiency when it comes to high schools and colleges educating students about money. Just relatively basic, or what we would consider basic personal finance concepts, are not conveyed to students. There have been studies where many, many college students don't even fully understand or comprehend where the funding for their education is coming from. And you can blame many parties for something like that. You know, that's something that every parent should be completely on top of as far as informing their child about, you know, how their education is being paid for. But I think, you know, even introducing some, you know, relatively basic money management and personal finance concepts would be extremely beneficial and extremely pertinent, because being in an information economy with so much revolving around financial matters, I believe that now is the time, probably more than any other time in history, to have a really educated populace in terms of those, you know, basic issues. And I think with that fundamental understanding, that could help them make better and more informed short and long-term decisions about the issues that we're talking about right now.
That's right. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas, and we're talking to Kevin Keller. Kevin is a student, a graduate business school student, and, of course, Aaron Clary, our good friend, the author of Worthless, as well as Enjoy the Decline, a couple of books that he's written. Well, let's look ahead, or maybe to the future. Obviously, the young people with the loans and already in college, well, they're already gone. But let's look at some of the young people in high school today and maybe what we should be saying to them. And I would argue, Aaron, that we should be saying to the young people in high school, look, you know, you got to look at this as an investment, but you ought to consider some vocational training, maybe become a plumber, maybe become a mechanic, maybe some entrepreneurial skills that or something you like to do that you like to turn into a business. Well, what do you think of that approach, instead of saying to them, hey, what college do you want to go to? Here's the application for a loan. Aaron.
Well, there's nothing to think about. It's common sense. All one has to do, and the data is out there, is look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics and find out what starting salaries are for different things. And what I don't understand today, although, you know, my conspiratorial nature would explain it, what I don't understand today is how kids today can't just simply go on the internet, look this stuff up, and say, wow, let me see here, for a fraction of the cost for a liberal arts degree at a four-year college, like literally a quarter of the cost, I can go to a trade school, a vocational school, or a tech school and get myself a certification that's going to get me like a degree like that, or an associate's degree that's going to pay a higher than average wage of the average liberal arts school. So we really ought to be pushing not so much trade schools, vocational schools, that's where it manifests itself in the real world. What we have to be pushing is skills. That's the key thing, because it is skills that's what's going to be in demand in the labor market, not your 18th century French poetry degree.
Right. No, exactly. Aaron, when you were thinking about going to college, what did you think about these things?
I thought about girls. I thought about girls, long legs, big boobs, and lots of hair. That's what I thought about. That's what I no. I thought economics, because I was in love with economics. But there was an element to sincerity. Like, I had to pay my own way through college. My parents were poor, so I had to pay for everything. So it had to pay off. So I ended up majoring in finance, actually, of all things, because that was a wise thing to do. You know, economics itself was almost too theoretical and too impractical. You almost have to get a doctorate to get a degree in that thing. So there was a hint of me observing on my own, like, boy, I got to make this pay off because I'm putting so much effort, money, and time into it. But I never had anyone like a dad or a father figure or an older brother or just a loudmouth economist saying, you stupid idiot, don't go major in this, don't go major in that. There really is no guidance, I believe, for kids nowadays.
Now, Kevin, when you were in high school and looking ahead to the future, You know, my I can give you my son's perspective, Silvio, the son that you know. He always knew what he wanted to do. I mean, it's amazing how focused he was. Going back to even when he was a junior in high school, I mean, he had pretty much incredibly almost like drawn up his life, and it's turned out to be incredibly similar to what he had in mind. But when you were doing it, how did you decide to do one thing or the other? And did you get counseling from high school counselors about, you know, the cost and the benefit of the return of a college education?
Yeah, so my viewpoint here is going to somewhat overlap with what Aaron and you were saying, and also I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate, because in my case, I attended Williams College, which is a liberal arts school, but it you know, one centerpiece of Williams was a really strong, you know, academic rigor and alumni network, and something that the liberal arts education really highlights is the ability to think critically and adapt. And one facet of this, you know, highly, because I agree that it is a very much a skills-based economy right now, and at the higher end, you know, industries, you know, popular industries keep changing and evolving. So that aspect of thinking critically and being able to, you know, adapt to brand new economic constructs, you know, was something that actually very much appealed to me in going to a liberal arts program. And something like writing, for instance, was a huge centerpiece of Williams. And, you know, obviously, you know, look at yourselves with the, you know, your publication history. And, you know, that's something I've tried to, you know, get started in myself, granted on a much, much smaller scale than both of you. But you know, having that, you know, insight and just being able to build upon my writing skills, it was something that I found college to be incredibly beneficial for, in my particular case. So for me, I didn't have Silvio's mindset in terms of knowing exactly what I wanted to be doing, you know, from junior year in high school. But I wanted to obtain an education that I felt would afford me the flexibility, you know, to, you know, gain sufficient expertise in, you know, in the necessary, you know, skills, you know, to help me, you know, navigate the modern economy that we're currently in.
Yeah, because, again, just getting back to my son Silvio, that ever since he was a junior in high school, he knew he wanted to complete the 5-year accounting degree at Texas A&M, and that's what he wanted to do, and he did it, and then he got an internship, and then he got a nice job, and now he's got a great job. So this is something he was very focused on, and he's done very well. But, I mean, a lot of other young people maybe are not didn't do it the way he did it, but I think the key to me, you know, as someone who went through this with my sons a few years ago, the key is I think we have to get more and more of these young people to see the whole picture, which is what Aaron is saying, I believe, to see the whole picture and understand, Aaron, that you're getting into a very expensive proposition if you go to college, and if you're not going to get a job or be able to pay back your loan, maybe it's worth looking at something else like the military or vocational training, or heck, just start your own business. I mean, I was talking to a fellow the other day who's a plumber, and, you know, he got his plumbing training and went to work with a plumbing company, and now the guy has his own plumbing company, and he's doing extremely well. He's an entrepreneur. He drives a nice car, lives in a nice home, and you're probably living better than many people who graduated from college, Aaron.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because they have a skill. They have something that's in demand. And, you know, think about it. You know, think about this. Okay, I got a wood-burning stove. We're in Minnesota. Things get cold up here. I know in Dallas you guys don't got to worry about heat. It's just, you know, girls in bikinis running around all the time. I know it's a horrible lifestyle, but in the north, we get a little cold up here, so I got a wood-burning stove. Well, you know what? The chimney sweeper, you know, you got to clean out your chimney every once. You know what he charges per hour?
I have no idea, but I bet it's a good living.
It's a good living, $120 an hour. Now, it only takes 30 minutes for him to do that, but think about that. for this guy to learn that particular skill and trade, and there is some skill, there is a trade involved. It's not like you just show up and shove things up the chimney sweep.
No, he's got a skill.
But this guy makes a better living than anyone graduating from the local liberal arts college or even the U of M business school. So it really does get back to the simple principle of economics. Do you offer society something that society wants? Like your son, he offers an accounting skill. I offer a capital allocation skill, if you want to really be really boring about business, as does Kevin. Kevin offers capital allocation. A surgeon can patch you up. Do you offer something to society that everybody wants? But if your quote-unquote skill is, you pick and choose, whining about Chicano studies and the oppression of white males against the Chicanos, that isn't really going to get you a place of employment in the long run. And
no,
the
you're
other
exactly
thing I want,
right. Now, right. I have a little surprise for you, Kevin, because speaking of Silvio, he's on with us. Say hello to Silvio. I think Aaron, I don't know whether you've met my son Silvio, but say hello to Silvio. Say hello to Aaron Cleary and to your friend Kevin.
Kevin and Aaron, how are you guys?
Excellent.
Hi, Silvio.
How are you, buddy?
Yeah, I just walked out of work and heard that Kevin was our special guest today, so I thought I'd dial in. Kevin, shouldn't you be studying for finals right now?
I have midterms coming up next week, but I'll study over the weekend.
Okay.
All right. Well, listen, I just wanted you to maybe get your 2 cents in, Silvio, on this conversation. I started out by quoting an article that was in CNBC today on the website, and here's what the article says. This is a survey of 600 hiring managers, Silvio, and this is what they say, that 66% of college graduates are not prepared for the workforce, and they just don't have skills, like Aaron was saying. Does that ring a bell with you or surprise you at all?
I guess when you're 66% of the – was this of graduating college?
No. It was college graduates. I mean, yeah, four-year – Not graduate school. I'm just talking college graduates, 4-year degree.
I would assume that number is a little high, but when you factor in the number of kind of vague majors that are out there that people trend towards, I guess I could see how that number comes out, where you're not really getting any specific applicable skills anywhere. That said, some people could argue that a business degree is a very vague degree, but luckily Kevin and I got enough of specific skills out of it to be doing just fine.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. I think there are a lot of vague degrees, and that's what the book Worthless that Aaron wrote is all about. But, you know, my feeling is, Silvio, you and I were in high school, did a program to a high school class last week to talk about my book, and there were lots and lots of young people there. They were asking questions about the future, and what were some of the questions they were asking you about degrees and what to do with their lives?
I mean, they were pretty specific. They were asking if they want to do accounting or finance, what should they do now? And I've said, well, other than just start, I don't know what you can do in high school aside from just, learning your fundamentals as much as possible, but there wasn't anything groundbreaking that I could tell them, really.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Aaron, you have spoken to young people. When you speak to them, what do they tell you about your program?
Well, it depends on what they majored in. There's obviously the kids whose parents, and this is what I was going to say before, is like parental intervention is very key, where, you know, the dad or the mother comes in and says, look, you dumb kid, you don't understand how this works. You're going to major in this. You're going to major in that. So when you have such clear leadership and guidance on the part of the parents, these kids become surgeons, actuaries, CPAs, whatever. So those kids have at least the foresight of their parents, so they're not confused. But for 85% of them, the remainder of these kids, they're clueless. They're like, well, I did what everybody told me to do. I did what my parents said. I did what my instructor said. I did what my counselor said. I graduated top of my class. The only problem is that they didn't major in something that's in demand. And so it's not even, I think truly, it's a sad statement, what the real pain of these young kids is not so much that they graduate with a ton of student debt, but that they have no clear leadership or guidance or context as to what is in demand. In other words, they don't even know why they can't find a job. They did everything that everybody, every adult told them to do their entire lives. They graduated, you know, with 4.0, whatever, and they did all the extracurricular, the diversity thing, and now then Glee Club or whatever. And all of a sudden, when it comes to the real world and the real world of economics, it doesn't pay off. So I think that's kind of the at least on a psychological level, the worst punishment these poor kids get. Then you add to the student debt that they can't pay back, they can't find a job. That is it as well. But that has been my experience, is the majority of these kids have not been told the truth, either because of a lack of will or cowardice on the part of us adults, us parents and older people, to provide them wisdom and guidance, because we don't want to tell them, hey, look, you can't become a poet. Or it is on the other end, where there have been the few parents and adults that said, look, you ain't going to become a poet. You can do that on your own side. You can go to the library on your own. In the meantime, if I'm paying your way through college, you're going to become an engineer or a doctor.
Right. Well, I think another thing, too, and we'll wrap it up in a couple of minutes, but another thing, too, is that the principle, and let me start with Kevin, the principle that you have to have something of value when you're looking for a job. You have to have something of value, if not a specific skill, something of value that you offer an employer, so the employer will hire you and invest the money in you, because it's going to take a little bit of time for a new person to be productive and profitable. So the employer, you have to have something of value, either your skills or your knowledge or something of value that will make you employable, Kevin. I think that's very important.
I agree completely, and I think we tie in like two or three things to this. If you look at the last, call it 25, 30 years, I would say I don't think either of you would argue with me that the value of a college diploma has gone down. It's been cheapened in a way because so many people are entering college and are being pushed to enter into college, whether it's the right or wrong decision. So as a result, there's been this relative glut, I would even call it, in terms of college graduates relative to what it had been a generation ago. And you couple that with the economic situation which we find ourselves in right now, which is that when you have the financial downturn 2008-2009, the fact is that many people who thought that they would be retiring, you know, part of the baby boom generation, are still in the workforce because of the financial hits that they took. So the rational decision is to keep working. That's exactly what I would do. But one byproduct of that is that there's been, you know, almost a stifling of upward mobility in that job market if you have a lot of the senior people, you know, remaining where they are, and you know the mid managers are not necessarily getting promoted in the same fashion, and that, you know, that cascades down to where, you know, there just isn't as much need to hire, and unless you have, as you said, you know, these like very tangible you know, skills or qualities that you can offer an employer. And coupled with that, the one last point is, over the last generation or so, you have the cost of a college education going up by about 5-6% annually, which, when you compound that over time, you know, is such a huge multiple of the inflation rate. And that's, I think, in part what's driving these huge debt loads, because it may have been true 30 years ago that somebody would have encountered student loan debt when graduating college, but for the most part, there were probably better employment prospects, and you know, their debt would have been something that adjusted for inflation we would say would be pretty manageable.
Right.
Whereas right now, you know, for a whole variety of reasons, which goes beyond the scope of this program, you know, higher education has, you know, just escalated beyond belief in terms of a cost structure, and that really the combination of all those forces is, you know, putting us into the situation where we find ourselves in as a society right now.
Yeah. Now, Silvio, one last point. When you were looking for a job and you were selling yourself to an employer, what types of things did you try to say or present that would add value to your resume?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess I've been, I think most of the time the job or the career paths that you take kind of build on one another. So I think the main thing that I had is my 3 years in investment banking, where I had very extensive valuation analysis and experience managing a lot of tasks and managing people. And so it kind of, at least people in the finance world know what that means. And so, it, you know, I think that it spoke for itself, at least. So, I mean, but I think more importantly, that was something that I was able to get because I had studied hard in school, and I was able to get go to a good school because I had done well in high school. And this is something that I can see how easily somebody can fall off the wrong path, and then it's a perpetual problem for where you're stuck in kind of this mediocre career path where all of a sudden you don't have any real skill or, you know, uniqueness that allows you to, you know, to be a good quick hire.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to be able to fix the whole problem today, but I do want to appreciate very much your joining us. Aaron, give us a little plug about the book. We have a link on the show information about the book. Tell us about Worthless and where to get it.
Well, Worthless, this really is the best thing a kid or a parent who loves their kid can buy in terms of, you know, preparation for college. And I'm not bragging. I'm not trying to sell the book. I'm being deadly honest. This book for the, I think it's, what, $12 on paperback, I think $5 or $6 for Kindle. Spend the money. Learn about what kind of a labor market and the realities of economics when it comes to what you decide for a major, how that's going to apply to you. Because this is not cheap money we're talking about. We're talking at minimum 50 grand a year. I'm sorry, 50 grand total for tuition and 4 years of your youth. So, you know, if your parents aren't giving you the guidance, or you don't even know how to approach your kid to tell them the realities of the labor market, get this book. This book is definitely a lifesaver in terms of that, and it will definitely earn its investment back. So for the $6 you're going to spend on Kindle for the book versus the $200 you're going to spend for professors, Joe's 15th edition for philosophy that you're forced to take, definitely get this book, Worthless. And seriously, that's the only plug I can give it. That's the best thing you can do for your kids or
no,
yourself.
It's a very good book. It really is a very good book. It'll give you a perspective, as I said, that most high school kids are not getting. And we have a link to the book on the show information. Just click on that. It'll take you to the website. Your website is called Captain Capitalism. I love your website, Captain Capitalism. Well, Silvio, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. I'm glad that you were able to surprise Kevin. Did you want to say anything to Kevin?
Well, Kevin, did you get a chance to plug your blog today? Kevin's got a great personal finance and just general economics blog that he keeps up when he can. He's very busy as a student, but
well, that's what I was going to do,
been,
Kevin.
He's
you
always
plug it.
Been an advisor to me in the personal finance and tax world. He's very well. He knows a lot in that area, more so than I would say most people that I've come across.
Well, Kevin, give it a plug. Come on, plug it.
Well, I don't know if I could do a better job than Silvio just did on my behalf, but
Well, you can give us the name of the blog or the link.
Where's the URL? That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just.
No, that's a fair
don't
point.
Don't keep it a secret, Kevin.
My website is krkreflections, all one word, .blogspot.com. And as Sylvia mentioned, it's I try to make it like very much original analysis on personal finance topics that could be very tangibly helpful to people, regardless of what financial situation they're in, as well as, you know, kind of linking the, you know, overall economics, you know, and, you know, taking that and, you know, linking it to their pocketbook issues and how,
now,
you know, because it's all interrelated.
You're a very busy guy with graduate school and all that. So how often do you get to post something?
Well, I don't nearly update my site as much as you and Aaron, but I make it where I basically update it a couple times per year, and you know what I'll do is I'll send out, you know, those updated articles, you know, so typically about 12 to 15 articles a year. And a nice facet about it is that the posts are pretty timeless, so whether you read it now or 3 years from now, you know, the major advice is going to be the same and directly applicable. So that's, you know, I really try to build a library over time, you know, rather than trying to keep up with, you know, yesterday's current event.
Right. No, and this is something that could turn into a career for you. This is, you know, something
yeah.
you might want to, you know, keep building on and offer your counsel to people as time goes by.
It's something I've, you know, really thoroughly enjoyed doing. It really sprung from graduating college, I guess, almost 6 years back now, and being relatively clueless on, you know, many of these practical day in day out personal finance issues, and I just tried to educate myself as much as I could about it. And then I would meet one on one with some friends of mine, and Silvio being one of them. And really, just those one-on-one interactions, you know, had it dawn on me that I you know, thoroughly love to do that, but I wanted to, you know, kind of get that information out there in a more efficient way, and that's the beauty of a website.
Right. Well, you know, you're always welcome to come on the show, Kevin, and talk about any of these ideas. Just send me an email and we'll bring you on to talk about any of these ideas. They're very, very valuable. But let me say thanks to all of you. Aaron Clary up in Minnesota, the author of Worthless. Aaron, as always, it's a great pleasure to have you on. And Kevin, thank you for joining us today. And, of course, my son Silvio, thank you for surprising us. I was glad that you did that. I think Kevin was probably happy to hear from you.
Not a problem. Hey, Kevin, actually, just on one last note, I can call you later if necessary, but I'm heading to Chicago in first weekend of June, and if you will be around, would love to meet up, maybe catch a Cubs game.
All right, yeah, give me a ring.
Win. They never win. That's the problem. Why would you catch it? There, you know they're gonna lose.
Well, yeah, but I've never been to Wrigley, so I at least have to go once. But right, they are.
Yeah, they might be like 10 and 50 by that point.
Tickets will be cheap. That's actually fine.
Well, Kevin, who's your favorite team?
Well, I grew up in New Jersey, so I don't have a huge, huge loyalty, but it would probably be the Yankees, which I hope does not alienate your entire listenership. But
well, here's the thing. Back in the late 90s, it probably would have, because back in the late 90s, the Rangers lost to the Yankees 3 out of 4 years in the first round. But
okay, yep.
Now we beat the Yankees in 2010 to get into the World Series, so we're not as overwhelmed by the Yankees. There was a time around here that we never thought we could beat the Yankees in the postseason. Sylvia may remember that. But
yeah, the Yankees have won one World Series out of the last 12 years, I think it is. So they're
right.
Not the dominant team that they were.
Talk about good investments and bad investments. I think the Yankees might turn out to be a pretty bad investment. But Aaron, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. Your book, Worthless, it's certainly worth the investment, and we certainly recommend it. And Kevin, thank you, and Silvio, thanks for joining us. Everybody have a great great evening. Thank you to the three of you.
Have a good night,
Silvio.
All right, guys. We're going to take a little break, and we will be right back with a closing commentary. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. What a great topic today. You know, this is something that I've been wanting to do for quite some time. We had done a couple of related type shows with Aaron Clary before, where we talked about his book, but I had never actually had the opportunity to do a show like this with students like my son, and, well, not students, but young men like my son and Kevin, and maybe talk about this from the perspective of a young person in the labor market. Obviously, there is a it's good to go to school. Don't misunderstand. Nobody's against education. Nobody's against training. I think it's important to have an educated population, but it's also important to have a population with skills. And the kind of population that understands what skills are in demand and is flexible enough to pursue those skills. And I think that when you look at so many young people today who I think are underemployed and indebted, I think it makes you wonder, you know, did they make the right choice? I mean, they're young enough that, I mean, it's not like their lives are over. I mean, if you're 25, 26 years old, you got plenty of time to correct your mistake and do something productive. But I would say one last thing. If I was talking to high school kids, if I was talking to high school students, and we had that experience, by the way, a week ago, as I mentioned, when Silvio and my other son, Gabriel, and I went to Newman Smith High School to talk about my book and talk a little bit about career. I think what I would recommend to a lot of young people is to get some skills and to realize that it's a very dynamic workplace. And I remember when Silvio was like in fourth grade or fifth grade, that the superintendent, this would have been, I guess, in the 90s, the superintendent of the Carrollton Farmers Branch School District came in one day because they were doing some kind of a school program, and she said something I'll never forget. She was speaking to the young people. Again, this is like 15 years ago, and she was speaking to the kids in that primary school, in that grade school, and she said to the kids, you know, the jobs that you guys are going to do in the future don't even exist because of our technology and things that are changing. And that's exactly right. I mean, there are jobs that 10 years from now that don't exist today because of the technology and everything going on. So it's very important for not only young people to get an education and to learn the basic writing, reading, and arithmetic. That's obviously very important, the basics, as they like to say. But I think it's also very important for them to understand they have to be flexible and that the world is changing. It's a very dynamic workplace, more entrepreneurial than it was when I was in school. And, you know, the old days of graduating and you get a job with a company and you spend the rest of your life with that company, those days are gone. More than likely, you're going to graduate from college today, get a job, and probably change a few times. Not because you're a job hopper, but just because the economy is that way. The economy is very fluid, and things are constantly changing. So my thanks to Kevin Keller, great guest, Aaron Clary, the author of Worthless, and, of course, our surprise visit from number one son, Silvio. Thank you so much for listening to our program today. We'll be back on Sunday with Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda. We'll get back into the politics and the current events and a lot of stuff going on around the world, so we'll have a lot to talk to Bill about. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody, and this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, where I think we're going to get some rain here in the next couple of minutes. Goodbye, everybody.